Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we have Marvin Recto, co-founder and head of technical design at TerraGrow and Drive Technologies. Marvin is an experienced IT professional with a proven track record of creating and managing successful businesses. He blends business acumen, tech savvy, and innovative ideas to develop and grow companies focusing on long-term value. Marvin excels in identifying and creating design elements that capture client needs and is known for providing creative solutions to complex issues. With expertise across gaming, consultancy, e-commerce, and more, Marvin is a dynamic leader committed to staying ahead of current design trends and technologies. I've asked him to join us here today to share his story and insights into the future of tech. So Marvin, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So how did you even get into this field, emerging tech and business and that? Is this like a family trade? Were your parents programmers or in business? Were they entrepreneurs?
Not really. I think it's a culmination of overall experience in the past. Like I started in the BPO industry, and then after that, I shifted into IT, and then after that into management. And then basically I've been working remotely for the past, I think, 12, 13 years now. And then it opens up different fields or different industry. And then I learned from that and then carry over the next one. And then I landed into mobile app.
Got it. So can you walk us through your initial experience? I've been working remote for a long time too. What was your first foray into founding a business? Did you have training and support? Did you have mentors and a board to advise you? Or did you just like jump in?
In terms of starting a TerraGrow and DriveTech, so we founded it together with my co-founder. And then we just realized that, we have like complementary skill set that we can bring into the table. And then we form our own company. So I think that's important in terms of building a company. Like you cannot do everything by your own. So you need help. And then from there, I started like a snowball effect, and then we started to do TerraGrow, which is, by the way, a hobby of mine like five, six years ago. I've been doing that manually. I know how it works. And then one time on our brainstorming session, it was pitched, and then probably we can do it. And then we integrate what we're really doing in DriveTech, which is mobile app design. And then from there, again, snowball effect of, okay, we can integrate this and this. And then we talk to engineers. And then, it become a business.
And so for people that don't know, TerraGrow is, the way you explained it to me, it's like having an aquarium, but instead of an aquarium, it's like a hydroponic tank. And you basically open the app and choose what you want to grow in there. And you just hit a couple of buttons. And all you have to do is put your seed in the rock wool. And the app, the software takes care of everything else from lighting to pH to all that sort of stuff. Is that fair? You just have to top up the water and fill up the tanks, so to speak, and then just let your food grow.
Yes, basically, TerraGrow is a company of smart hydroponic solutions. Because if you notice out there, most of the hydroponic solutions are large scale. It's designed for businesses. And then the end result is that you sell those produce to people. In TerraGrow, the product is called food replicator. Essentially, you're right when you said it's an aquarium. All you need to do is put a seed, put it on the rock wool, select that type of seed or plant from the app, and it will automatically take care of the correct parameters, the light, the water level, the nutrient solution, all of those things.
Right.
So, and then that is a product, or that is ultimately our goal is to make this as a very well-known appliance, so that it's something that every people wants to have on their home.
Right. I love that idea we had a call before this interview and I was fanboying a little bit just because I've got a hydroponic tower in my patio because I feel like that's such a great idea. That was what I was trying to tool around and figure out was, how do you make this more accessible to more people? And I think especially with things like COVID, it really accelerated people's need for that. Geez, I couldn't go to the grocery store. And now there's all these protests for farmers like, hey, stop messing with our food supply. And hey, this is not, I know that for a lot of us, we've all grown up in times of relative prosperity, no matter where we maybe started. But there have been many famines in history where millions of people starve. And I think it's easy for people to forget how important the fundamentals are. You take everything for granted. What is it? It's like they say, a healthy man has a million wishes, a sick man has one. And that's the same thing. Like when you got a grocery store full of food, I want to travel. I want to actualize. I want to manifest. I want to meditate and do my yoga. When you don't have any food, you're like, I want to eat. And that's all of a sudden, all that other stuff goes away. You're forgetting about your dog and your yoga. And you're like, I need some food.
Actually, that's one of our key points or key takeaways once we're in Morocco. So we will be attending the JITEX on the 28th. One of the key points that we have there is that everyone is like hyping the AI, machine learning, crypto, those type of things. But I think we're forgetting something. We got to eat. Until our human forms are sufficient enough not to get nutrients from eating, I think maybe that's the only time. I don't know when would that be that we can truly deviate from that one. But yeah, I think that's one of the key reasons why we are really looking forward to building TerraGrow as a company.
Yeah, I love it. So what were some of the biggest challenges? Because obviously it took you a while to get to this, running two companies now and turning down a lot of big investors.
One of the biggest challenges that we face is that there are no data that are available, because we've talked to several universities here in the Philippines and also in the US, and that we're asking them if there are data or information available about this venture. Let's say, what are the light level or how many hours that a specific plant needs a light? What are the specific nutrients? You can get some of it, but it's not complete in terms of what we need so that it can be represented in the back end of the app or in the back end of our design architecture. So we need to build that one, test some out. And also there's still some plants that are in theory, we can grow, but due to loss, I guess, we cannot really try that here, specifically in the Philippines.
Oh, you're talking about the cannabis. We talked about this before too, right? We've had a lot of interest from cannabis growers, and it's illegal in the Philippines. So
we have a lot of interest coming from specifically in the United States that, right, can you grow this? I said, in theory, yes, why not? Because the food replicator is an enclosed environment wherein you can grow, you can recreate the parameters, the environments of plants wherein they can truly thrive, right? So that's the objective of the box. Now, in theory, any plants can grow there. So all we need to do is have that accurate data, input it on a database, and then our sensors will do the rest. Again, we cannot really check up on that.
The cannabis growers have figured out all those numbers. That industry has everything so dialed in. When I was a teen, I may or may not have been involved.
They're not sharing it. They keep close to the vest. Another thing that we are trying to build, by the way, is that there's a data collection of data sharing of the findings or the results that the end user has. Because we think as well, we were thinking during this process that what if we gather all those valuable information that will be helpful in the next generation? And okay, this is the best output, or this is the best yield that I got from these XYZ parameters. And then that will just trickle up. So it's not another thought that I had is that ultimately, the old school or the OG farmers will gonna die. It's just the way it is. But there's no way for them to transfer the knowledge that they have. Maybe by practice, but how are you going to scale that quickly? By these information, by these knowledge-based sharing. And then ultimately, I think the next generation will be like the end result or end user of these valuable information.
Yeah, I think things are cyclical. And I think we're heading back towards embracing.
It's inevitable.
Like you mentioned, it's all over the world. A lot of the farmers are retirement age, and there's no one that's trying. Everyone's trying to become a millionaire with the next app. No one's trying to poke funny or anything, but no one's really focused. You're focused on providing food, but a lot of people aren't focused on how do I feed my neighborhood or my community and have a nice six-figure income. Like people aren't even thinking about that kind of thing. So that's very interesting. What would you recommend to someone who's starting out or struggling? They're starting a company, they're a startup, they're trying to gain traction, user adoption. They're struggling between users and income and development. Any advice?
I think the advice that I can give is try to push more than what you can do. It's like you'll really never know when you'll get, will cut that break. For instance, I can only speak from my experience. So we've emailed, because we have a mailing list, right? For example, we emailed around 8,000 plus in potential investors, potential partners on this one, that we talked to around close to 1,000 of them for the past 2 years now. And then all of a sudden we got one, someone invested in the company. That's Bell Capital. So we got the first investment. I cannot explain. I think I can explain. I got a very weird feeling in my gut of, I think it's a mix of happiness or excitement or something. Once you get that first investment, you feel different. So you think, you'll feel like, oh, someone is invested in this one. So that kind of gives you more fuel to push more, that your idea is not just an idea, but now it's something that, yeah, okay, I got what you're trying to do. Here's a couple of bucks, a couple of money, a couple of funds. And then I want to take you, you're now here. I want you to take you to the next level.
Right.
So that's just pushing. So that's grit. And I'm not going to lie, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's not for all. So you have to just keep on pushing.
I like that. I think that's good advice. Nobody cares, work harder.
Yeah. Also, if you're like in work settings and then you have teammates or you got employees, for example, right? You cannot really ask them to have the same vision or have the same work ethic as you do, because this is your business. So right. You're definitely going to be working harder. All you can do is be transparent to with them, be honest with them. This is what you want to accomplish. And once we get there, all of us will benefit. But if you think, or if you thought that you can, oh, you're expected to work this hard because I'm working this hard, I think that's the wrong mindset. This is what we're going with the current workload that you have. All I ask for you is that once we're doing something, just make it to a point that you're doing the best version of you can on that part. So
I think that's great advice. I talk about this a lot on past interviews, but it's just because it sticks with me that markets are unknown and unknowable. If I ask you how many people are in market for a car today, we could look at indicators, keyword searches, traffic, that, but ultimately we don't really know, and it's constantly changing. So the market is unknown and unknowable, but everyone can recognize excellence. So if you're North Star is being the most excellent at solving the problem you're trying to solve and get paid to solve, that is like the guiding light that can see you through trends and new emerging technology. Just focus on being the most excellent solution for that problem, period. Because that's what happened to newspapers. They forgot. They thought they were getting paid to put advertising wrapped in stories, local stories, and deliver them door to door. Blockbuster versus Netflix. Blockbuster was a $6 billion company. They could have hired any talent. They could have developed any tech. They had a chance to buy Netflix once upon a time and decided against it. And then they were taken over by Netflix and ran bankrupt. And it's just this whole disconnect of what problem are you solving for people and are you the most excellent at it? And I think part of why that sort of thing happens is the builders come in, the innovators, they build something, and then the managers and scalers come in, a lot of the accountants and lawyers and stuff, and they scale things, but they can't innovate. Per se, they can just build more track down the path it's already going. But I think that's great advice. Focus on excellence and nobody cares about your problems. Work harder. That's right. And I think it's really important that people understand you got to get it out there. You got to talk to people about it. You got to meet with people about it. You mailed 8,000 people to get one sale.
Essentially, that's the ratio of it. So
people, I think, underestimate the amount of effort it takes to get momentum.
Yeah. And then once you get there, because most of the investors that we've had this discussion is that, okay, get back to me when you got this amount, get back to me when you got this traction, get back to me when, okay.
Yeah.
Definitely we're gonna have that discussion again, because prior to this, we've attended one in Qatar, a Web Summit Qatar back in February. My co-founder attended Seamless Dubai, I think last month, and now we're going to Jitec. So these are the events that we're in. It's important to startup founders to go to these type of events, talk to people, maybe investors, maybe your fellow co-founder, because those are the places that you are in the people, you are in the place where basically you're the same people with. These people have the same, or maybe even worse. You can learn from each other. You've been going through the same, is essentially. So it's imperative to go to these type of places.
Yeah, you got to get out there and network. It's a catch 22, because if you do what everybody does, you get what everyone has. And not every, the sea of mediocrity is vast. So you got to be careful. And you also have to be careful. Elon, I say this again, Elon Musk made $300 million pre-selling a car he had no factory to build and no team to help him make. All he had was a minimum viable product. And he got people to put a down payment down and pre-sales and pre-orders. And I know that in my hometown in Canada, there was a gym. It was called Good Life. And they were a chain like Anytime Fitness here in the Philippines. And they were going to open up one next to this mall where I grew up. And they had the trailer outside and they were marketing it. And there's advertising everywhere. And there's construction going on inside the building. They were building the gym. And this happened for maybe a month, 2 months. You could just see there's a drive to sign up members while they were building. And all of a sudden, everything disappeared. And I remember talking to someone that was working with them. What happened? They said, oh, we didn't meet our numbers. So they decided not to open the gym. And so it wasn't that they invested all that money and then built it and then tried to make it work. They tried to sign people up in advance. And when they couldn't do their pre-sale member, they just cut their losses and moved on.
What happened to the money today? Is there a refund?
I didn't ask about that part. I'm sure people, no, I've never seen complaints about people complaining that they paid for a membership and never got it. They were signing up for a gym that hadn't opened yet, that was under construction. I think that was the big thing, was trying to get a number, a certain echelon, a certain threshold of members in advance before they sunk whatever it was going to be, a million plus into the facility. They're like, we need to be able to reach this many members in this much time. And this wasn't a new chain either. They had multiple chains at this point. If we go here and we do
popularity, they're banking on their existing popularity.
I think it's my belief that a franchise is really just one store that works. And then, so what happens is they create an operations manual. Here's how you run a store like this. This is how you handle customers. This is how you deliver the same quality. And they sell that operations manual to franchisees, and the franchisees pay 20% back to the franchise. And that goes into a marketing pool. And now what it really is the franchise headquarters becomes the marketing headquarters, where they test the marketing in different markets. And when they have something that works, they roll it out and peel and stick everyone's different phone number and address on it. That's a lot of pizza chains, all that stuff. There's one that's, when you can use paid ads to drive new sales in your business, that's really what separates a lot of small mom and pop businesses to nationwide brands. Of course, branding on its own has its own thing. You build a brand, but for a lot of people to build an Apple or a Nike or something, this takes a lot of time and a lot of celebrity influencers and endorsements and stuff. But in the short term, I think it's really just about what's the offer that converts, right? What problem are you promising to fix for people? And are they willing to pay for that to be fixed? And how many people would put a down payment on it? There's always early adopters. So there's a catch 22. And like you said, you had to do, a lot of these people came back and said, come back when your idea is more polished. Come back when you got to be careful, because there's some people that are just parasites. They just want to make a buck. And so they want you to come back when you already have taken flight. You're already a guaranteed thing. You're already growing, and they just want to put in a dollar and pull it $1.20. And at that point, you don't even necessarily need them, but you may not know that type of thing. And then there's the people that have vision with you and see the idea, and they are on a similar mission, and they'll invest early to get things off the ground. And there's a difference. So it's a bit of, I don't know. There's a lot of different ways to plant a tree, I guess they say, but where do you think the technology in this route is going? Because there's been a lot. Elon Musk, I mentioned Elon, his brother had invested in vertical gardens. I think that company closed down, though. I'm not sure if they did or didn't.
I think those big companies for hydroponics, the goal there is to get much food and then sell those foods to public.
Right.
What we're trying to do is that we are empowering everyone to have their own. Because if you cannot really consume, let's say, 100 kilos of tomatoes just by yourself, right? So instead of still relying on businesses to buy your produce, why not have your own? It may be a little bit smaller, and then it started for, and then after everyone have that mindset or got that mindset of making their own food, and then it will trickle down into, okay, maybe your next door neighbor is growing this, so you can trade of some sort. And essentially, we're bringing in the old school or old ways of like barter, like trading of crops. I think it's a good way to build a community. And then with the power of the platform that we're building, we are also integrating other features where you can see people with like fresh crops, you can trade in with them, you can meet with them. So it said instead of like your traditional community on social media, where all you can see is hate, vitriol, those type of things, you'll see, oh, Jimmy here is like harvesting 5 kilos of lettuce, for example. So from then you can have a notification on your phone as well that, okay, so this is just like maybe the next block, a couple of meters away. Maybe you can hit them up, introduce yourself, and then build a good relationship based on the crops that you have. So it's a combination of those. And I think by integrating technology and farming, it also helps the next generation not to get bored, essentially, because nobody wants to work in farm, at least based on our research now, compared to the way it was built, because there are a lot of alternatives compared to like doing hard work. Because before, on the older generation, you don't have a choice. You need to either inherit the family business, you have to go out there, and there. But now, compared to traditional farming, but it's getting a little bit easier and easier with the tractors, with the vehicles and all of that, compared to the olden age.
Where everything was manual.
Exactly. But now we're taking it a little bit on the next level, but not really focus on the farmer themselves, like the traditional farmer. It's more of the household. So that's why my best way to look at it, or if I'm being very optimistic, is that I want food replicator to be something synonymous to a coffee maker or microwave, that everyone is familiar with it. So they can have a little bit of space allocated to it on their house.
Yeah. Even if it was just for herbs, fresh herbs are amazing. Herbs. And there's a ton of health benefits from fresh herbs too.
Never underestimate a good fresh basil and spinach. Yeah. Right?
There we go. Talking my language. No, we had another guest on here. I told you about him before. He's out of Canada. He had done something different, but it was a similar idea, empowering people to have a low maintenance tech influence home garden type thing. And that he did really well with that. No, I think there's a ton of potential in that. Where do you see, like I said, the future of this? Have you done any research on this kind of thing in terms of, we know the population of the earth is growing. We know we have to feed all these people. We're dealing with climate issues. I'm personally a believer that we are warming, but it's not carbon. It's actually the sun and the magnetic field, but we'll go, that's a different route. But we are warming. There's geopolitical issues at play. There's technological advancements happening. Where do you see things in 5, 10 years? Do you see there being any shortages? There's all sorts of stuff happening in the world. Do you feel that there's a lot of stability? Even at the time of this recording right now, China is surrounding Taiwan. We got Israel and Palestine. We got Ukraine and Russia. That's all. There's big stuff happening.
My mind kind of has a dark place for that. I think we're going to experience worst first before it gets better. And then not just the statistics, but I think what's happening right now, it's more of like an influence by people in power that we're not really aware of, so to speak. Like, there are puppet masters out there that are pulling all of these things together for their own benefit.
Yeah. There's that guy, that speaker. He speaks at the World Economic Forum. Yorval. I know his name when I read it. I don't know how to pronounce it, but he did his interview on Lex Friedman's podcast. And I was really upset because I felt like Lex was just licking his balls. Because there's no group of elites that are making decisions to impact the rest of the planet. That's just a conspiracy theory. You don't have a group that makes decisions that affects the whole. And I'm like, how is Lex accepting this? Like, what about a school board? What about a president of a country? What about a general of an army? What about the CEO of a company? What do you mean? What about a board of directors? What do you mean there's no group of people? What's the United Nations? What's the G7? What's the G20? Like, how did Lex sit there and swallow this guy's cock telling him this and just, you're right. Yeah, it's totally confused. Yeah. I was so mad when I saw that because I felt like this is paid propaganda. I felt like this is paid propaganda, or Lex was just really embarrassed or shy about upsetting his guest when he said that. And because I get what Yuval Harari or whatever his name is, was trying to say. He's trying to say that what people think about this isn't true. But the way he said it, there's no groups that make decisions. There's even mathematicians out of Switzerland that did a study called Methods of Corporate Control. I think it was corporate.
Are you talking about BlockRock, ESG, those?
Yeah. So there's there's mathematicians out of Switzerland, and they just took an analysis. Yeah. Network of Global Corporate Control. The Network of Global Corporate Control. Stefania Vitali, James Gladfelder, Stefano Battiston. These are guys out of Switzerland. They did a study. They're scientists, they're mathematicians. They did a statistical analysis and looked at this. And their estimate is that about a group of 800 people control 51% of all the stock of all the companies just by owning companies that own companies.
I read that type thing. I think those big companies, last time I read that, I think they own like 75% of the Fortune 500.
When it's because they own all the stocks and all the companies that invest in it, and it's a big.
That's crazy. Slice of wealth.
You have to remember the reason why there's a first and third world and no second world is because the first world, essentially, and I don't blame, like, I'm Canadian. I don't blame my fellow Canadians for this arrangement. We're just a British colony, but it is the history of things. Like, France showed up to Haiti with a bunch of battleships and said, "Hey, you're now a French colony, and 40% of everything everybody makes here is ours. And if you say no, we're just going to kill everyone and move a bunch of French settlers over here. So what do you want?" And they signed the contract. And so now that's it. And so 30-40%. There's all these tariff agreements where countries have to buy rice, even though they sell rice, they make a surplus because they have to prop up the economy of some other country. And it's all this non-meritocracy, just protectionism type thing. And so we're all just colonies. That's part of what's going on in Canada right now. If you listen to the oath, there's a video on YouTube of Justin Trudeau swearing in as prime minister. And he says the oath. And the oath he says is the oath every prime minister has said when they get sworn in. And when you listen to it, there's nothing there about Canadian people. It is all about the queen and promising to keep her secrets and being loyal to the crown. And it's all, and people are like, "Oh, it's just whatever. It's just a ritual. It doesn't mean anything." I don't know. I think it does. I think if you take a look at what's happened to Canada, I really think it does. I think it means that the government's collecting tax money. Canada, you pay something like 30%, 50% in tax. So if you pay me $500, I got to pay 50% of that in tax, income tax. And then when I go spend money, I pay 15% tax, sales tax. So now I'm paying 15% on that, like inheritance tax. It's all these taxes everywhere. And all the money goes to the government and they get to choose who they spend it with. And it just happens to be companies that happen to be owned by cousins of people that work for you. It's just a giant, let's take the wealth from this group and put it to that group. And it's just, it's the colonialism never changed.
In my mind.
Yeah. The positions of power are not the ones that we vote on. That's why voting isn't fixing the problem. That's why it was like, this time I'm going to vote. It's going to change everything. It's like fighting a forest fire with a garden hose. You're just, what are you talking about? Sorry, I didn't mean to take the conversation there, but obviously somewhere. It is what it is.
I even have my theory about voting. I think we need to figure out a way wherein instead of everyone is an equal vote, it should be like per merit. Let's say you're a teacher, you're a professor, your vote is a little bit higher compared to your normal individual. If you're a doctor, because you need to have, because you have a lot of say on these type of issues. Let's say, for example, I don't know the math to do that yet, but I think every individual, depending on their profession, should they have like a grading system of some point, and then they can vote on special
because you're topics. More knowledgeable about X than someone else. Yeah, that makes sense. That's tough because you have to get everyone to agree on everything. That's part of why I think I love the free market system.
But sometimes freedom is just an illusion. So it's not really freedom. It's like a preset of what will happen. It's like putting the mind of public at ease that, okay, this is the end result that they might get. But
what do you mean?
Ultimately, it's set. No, the context of freedom itself. Okay, so we're really free to do this and this. But again, back to the puppet master. Sometimes it really predicted that will happen. If that didn't happen, this will happen. Right. So they have to either war or regardless predicted. So
yeah, I think a big key to this is it has to be a meritocracy. It has to be in pursuit of truth and excellence. And we have to get away from rent seeking behavior, because rent seeking is just wanting to extract something for personal gain without adding more value to the system. It's essentially a parasite based mentality. Like if you're a landlord and you're providing security and you're making sure the facilities are great and all, that's fine. But if you are just trying to extract all the money you can from the asset you've built, and who cares if your plumbing's backed up for your tenants and like that sort of thing, it's just a parasitic thing. It's not, there's no value in that sense. And there's a lot of people that get in those kinds of positions either because they don't know how to innovate. And there's a fear, right? A fear of poverty, a fear of desperation. So we're not going to solve the world problems on this podcast, but I think these are the conversations that more and more people need to be having, because anytime master planners have come in, it's always ended in death and decay and chaos. That's the whole socialism, communism. It's all about give everything to the smart people and let them do the master planning. But the problem is that just like with farming, right? What works to grow crops in my local climate may not work just exactly. Even 30 minutes down the road. They might be at a different elevation. So there's all these, and this is where master planning just causes millions of people to die. Anytime anyone's really tried to execute it, they have these empire builders. The empire builders always forget about agriculture and the people. And that's why excellence, letting people vote with dollars, let them choose on the most excellent solution for them, as opposed to enforcing stuff. And that's, I think, a really important where we need this marketplace of ideas. But you got to watch out for crony capitalism and protectionalism. I don't know if that's a word I'm making up, but protection.
I think I said this to my co-founder as well. If all the startup founders get the necessary funding that they want, I think the world will be a better place, because we're the movers of the civilization in terms of the technological aspect of it. Once we at least have a foot in the door of what we're trying to do, and then people see that innovation we're trying to push, not just TerraGrow as a company, not just Food Republic, but I think most, or maybe not 100%, but maybe 90-95% of these startup founders are really trying to do something good, or right. Ideas are really valuable, because there's still crazies out there, I'm not gonna lie.
Right.
But I think for most of us, we're really trying to advance the cause, advance what we believe. We believe in something, I think that's good. So something to look forward, something to achieve. And then most of the, especially at the early ages, it's just the funding that kind of slows down the progress that we're trying to do.
I'm going to push back on that a little bit. I think so, yes. But at the same time, Elon Musk made $300 million selling a product. There's 101 okay. people you can make pre-so. It's not the funding. So this, what you reminded me of, and I understand what you're saying, because there is some, like, you do need to get roof and ramen. You got to be able to have some idea. It's the whole concept of when a parent has kids, you got to provide for your kids so they can learn enough and figure out what they're going to do. You can't just have a kid and throw them out in the world and, hey, go work. They have to figure out, like, and I understand that's a part of it as well. But I had a friend, I'm not going to say her name, but she tried to open up a yoga studio, failed at it, tried to open up another business, it failed. And then when I talked to her, she was applying for a government grant to open up an entrepreneurship facility to teach entrepreneurs how to be successful. Yeah. And I felt, so wait, you've had two, and I didn't say this, but in my mind, I just helped a company do $1 million in sales. And I was like, so let me get this right. You failed in business twice. So now you're asking for government money to pay you to create a facility for you to teach people on how to be successful in business. And I was just like, there's just so much wrong with that scenario, like in my mind. And that's part of the whole proof. People will pay lip service.
So I have a quick rebuttal for that, Elon
Musk.
So the thing about Elon Musk is that he's already Elon Musk. He got all the necessary connection for marketing for Tesla, because before he built Tesla, he already got PayPal and other bunch of companies.
Right.
So Elon Musk is in a power position that whoever he talked to will ultimately cave in. So that's just my point of contention in terms of he already, regardless of not having the quote unquote funding, he's already established.
Well, but even before then with PayPal. He's not a trust fund baby. He's not a trust fund baby.
Of course, I know that. But again, your example earlier is like Tesla. Like, he built a $300 million company without having anything, just marketing. But he's already Elon Musk. So he got the necessary connection prior to that, like the marketing. Because
for the PR, sure.
If you're bootstrapping, like your normal startup founder, essentially you're pulling everything out of your pocket. Like the people you talk to, the design, the services, those type of things. You got to use your own fund. You got to use your own money. You got to do loans, financing, those type of things. And that's very hard, especially if this is the only problem or if this is the only business that you have. So most of the time, either you're starting a new company or a new venture, or you start a founder, you have an existing job. So this is what we do in DriveTech, the other company that we have. So whatever it is that we've learning in TerraGrow, we're sharing it to them. Oh, you need to do this and this. So you have two options. You can do this on your own, or you can partner with us. So these are the type of things that we're willing to share in terms of the people that have the same journey with us. So right now we have a couple of ventures that we're helping in terms of building their company, because I'm not saying specifically me. I'm not saying that this is the best. I know all of what's happening, but this works for us. So you can have an option to try this out, or maybe during the process, you can make your own adjustments here and there, and ultimately share those information to them as well.
Now, so you're talking about with your hydroponic system, you're sending it to people with default settings, but what you're hoping is user generated data to feedback on what worked versus didn't work with. Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I think that's a great thing, because you're a platform. It's not just a product. It's a product, but it's also a platform, because other people may have other versions with other sensors. And it's like 3D printers. There might end up being five different main types of food replicators, but ultimately you're building the platform where people share data and it preloads the settings into the thing. And that's, I think, a really viable thing. Yeah, there's infrastructure build for sure, 100%. So there's not, like I said, there's more than one way to plant a tree. But I think when I talk to a lot of the business owners I talk to, the reason why they fail is they spend all their lives cackling in a closet like mad scientists about this wonderful thing they're going to bring to the world. And they're not talking to the people that it's supposed to be taken care of or serving. And that's a big part of it. And that's that conversation. I remember earlier on, they were talking about when you have an idea, you need to go get 100 deep dive surveys. And all these people go, how do I get 100 people to tell my surveys? And I'm like, how are you going to make 100 sales if you don't even know how to get 100 surveys done? Like, the survey is free. It just takes a couple of minutes. Yeah. If you can't go get 100 prospects to answer your survey to understand your prospect better, how are you going to make 100 sales? Because what percent of people of leads that you get do you think you're going to be selling? 100%? You know what I mean? 200%? So it's that sort of idea where people, and I'm beating this drum because you had said and pointed out that when we were getting started, we had to email 8,000 people and we got one person to invest. And it took 2 years. And I think that's a really important benchmark for people to understand, that you can send those 8,000 people emails over 2 years. You can send them 8,000 emails in a week, 2 weeks, depending on if the email service provider shuts you down or not. But it's going to take a certain amount of work. And I just wanted to hammer that. And a lot of people are like, I'm not ready yet. Yeah, but I'm not ready yet. Yeah, but put it into someone's hand once you have your minimum viable product. That was the story of the gym. They basically put a stake in the ground and had some construction crews building, going, hey, we're going to make this thing. And here's the pictures, ink on paper, of what it's going to look like. Can we sign up this many members for that dream? And when they couldn't, they thought maybe that isn't what's wanted by this community. I think that's important because the world is changing so fast. A lot of people are having to pivot. And with innovation, a lot of people, there's threats and risks that their industry might be upset. I just think that these are important lessons for us to talk about and get clear on.
Yeah, especially in this generation where most of the bigger companies or bigger institutions are heavily focused on sustainability.
Right.
So I think this is something that's worthy of looking at in terms of these type of projects. So
right. We'll see. Yeah, sustainability is big. We can't keep filling the ocean with plastic. We need to have better packaging and materials. The landfills are filling up. We got to figure out a smarter way. And we have those solutions. But
well, if you grow your own food with our food replicator, you won't at least eliminate the packaging of those. So that's a win.
Well, and again, I think it also helps people get connected. I think people are so disconnected from the circle of life because we're apex predators on this planet. People are so detached from understanding how the circle.
Or are we?
If you want to get into UFOs, maybe we're not. Maybe we're just animals in a zoo. And that's why the zookeepers don't want us to talk about them and XYZ, all this sort of thing. Because maybe they're just zookeepers. Maybe we're just under observation. Maybe we're just a giant ant farm for them. Who knows? Maybe they're cultivating souls. That's part of the conversation we had before. Maybe they're cultivating souls. Maybe some are trying to get lean us one way or another type thing. Yeah. Maybe they harvest soul. You could say that. That's what's happening when people talk about God and the devil's trying to harvest one type of fruit and God's supposedly trying to harvest a different type of fruit. So
we'll see.
Yeah, it's interesting. It is interesting. Our brain did suddenly jump all of a sudden. So something happened. Anyways, this has been very interesting. What are some of the skills and behaviors that you think are most important to develop walking into the future and developing a business in today's day? You talked about grit, and commitment. But to really hit the nail on the head, can you speak some more to some certain skills that you feel are important to develop?
I think another thing will be natural born curiosity on things. You cannot just rely on what you've learned during your academic years. You cannot fixate on that. You cannot focus on what you learn. It's over. So you need to constantly learn new stuff, adapt to the market, not just on your product, but like general worldviews, general things that is happening. How can you pivot or transition into certain issues, not just on your business, but I think generally in life. So that natural curiosity towards things, I think that should, don't let that extinguish inside of you. So you need to have that. And I think it will just continue to develop, just an entrepreneur, but also as an individual, as a person.
Yeah, I think that's really important. That's how specialization is. If a university can produce 1,000 people in your field, there's no job security because they can just go train up somebody else and replace you. So that's where, like you mentioned, following your natural instincts, that leads to interesting combination of skill sets.
Especially right now, also in this day and age, you can find a lot of materials online. You don't have to pay for it. Of course, the paid ones are significantly better. For example, I'm using LinkedIn Premium. So there are lots of good materials there. It's constantly being updated. So what are the new things? What are the industry standard in terms of being implemented? So you need to have those cons. And then you need to have trade-offs. So let's say, for example, before you're watching like Netflix 5 hours a day, so at least introduce 1 hour of like new learning new skills and then eliminate 1 hour on that one. And then those build good habits in terms of you need to have, we are all given 24 hours a day.
Right.
So how are you going to spend that is solely up to you. So you cannot really complain that I don't have time for it. You can make sacrifices. You can make those changes, but it's hard to pull those time. Is this really important to me? Is this really helping me becoming a better individual? So those are the trade-offs that you need to make those decisions.
I agree with that 1,000-fold. Time commitment, time management, and energy management are underappreciated for exactly those reasons. And you have to understand,
that's the reason actually why I decided to work from home. The traffic is crazy.
Yep.
When I started, the commute time is around 3 hours back and forth, and it's being... And I'm lucky. Yeah. Sometimes it goes to 5 plus the 9 hours. That's around 11, 12 hours of your life. That's half day, literally half day of your life.
Yeah.
And you break in traffic and then you're going to sleep 8. So you have 4 hours. And then what about your prep time? What about the other things that you need to do? So essentially your entire day is just gone.
Gone just to go to work and come home.
So that's why I shifted into this. I think work from home is like valued during the pandemic times more compared to the way it was, because they didn't realize that you can have more time with your family compared to going to the office. And then another thing is that you can get 2-3 clients depending on what your workload is. So you can get more money as well if you ventured into that. So it was, I have several batchmates and classmates that's exploring these work from home. During the pandemic season, they've been asking me where to get this job, blah blah blah, those type of things. So they're very appreciative on what are the benefits of that, and they didn't know that before. Your time is something that you cannot really, when it's gone, you cannot really, unless we invent time travel. So
it's coming eventually. It's coming.
But time is something that you really need to learn how to manage and make those sacrifices.
And speaking of time, I want to be respectful of yours, so I know we're coming up to the hour. This has been a great call. Marvin, is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I think we're good. So
yeah. If people want to learn more, if they want to get in touch and find out, if they want to learn more about TerraGrow or talk to you about app development, what are the best ways for them to reach out?
As I've said, we've been visiting techs on the 28th of May. For more information, you can visit our website at terra-grow.com. And then also you can visit our website for app design development at drivetechnology.co.
That's drivetechnology.co and Terra, terra-grow.co, correct?
Dot com.
Com. Terra-grow.com. Yes. Okay. Terra-grow.com. Terra-grow.com. Marvin, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an honor and a pleasure sharing this space with you today. Thank you for coming and having this chat. And I wish you all the best in your ventures.
Thank you. I appreciate it.